It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and you are listening to MPBN Radio. Ahead on Main Things Considered this evening, the latest on the legislative controversy about general assistance payments to asylum seekers in Maine. And also in Augusta, a look at how the state's borrowing plan is shaping up for this year. We'll have those stories in a moment. First, this news. I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. The Portland City Council is expected to vote on a budget tonight that could include city funding for about 1,000 asylum seekers at risk of being cut off from state aid that provides food, shelter, and basic needs. As Caroline Losneck reports, hundreds of people have gathered to show support for these new immigrants, whom they fear will fall through the cracks without help.
The front steps at Portland City Hall are filled at this hour with people urging the city to continue providing general assistance to asylum-seeking immigrants. Supporters holding lights and carrying banners say they are here to recognize the nearly 1,000 asylum seekers in the Portland area that would be impacted by cuts. People who are gathered outside City Hall say they'll fill the City Hall chamber and balcony before the City Council meeting tonight. The councilors will meet at 5:30 to decide the fate of the aid program and the city budget. Some of the questions the council will likely discuss include who will qualify for aid, how much money the city can provide, and if the city's property taxpayers can afford it. For MPBN, I'm Caroline Losneck.
Leaders of Maine's Indian tribes say the failure of a bill to create a tribal casino in northern or eastern Maine widens the rift between tribes and state leaders. Brenda Commander, chief of the Houlton Band of Maliseet Indians, said the tribes might consider a new approach to make the casino project happen. And members of the media and others, including Governor Paul LePage, got a sneak preview of the new inn at Diamond Cove. The $12 million project features redevelopment of the largest remaining structure within the Fort McKinley Historic District on Great Diamond Island, which is part of Portland. The inn was under construction and less than 2 weeks from completion when it was destroyed by fire in November of 2013. Hotel operator Chris Hart says the enlisted men's double barracks, which had been vacant for more than six decades, has been developed into a 19,000-square-foot hotel.
We're happy that the last remaining large building of Old Fort McKinley has been restored and is now in use as a job-creating facility, tax-paying.
Hart says the inn will be opening in 2 weeks on July 10th. Looking at the weather tonight, we'll see clear skies with low temperatures in the mid-40s to high 50s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny in the south, partly sunny in the north, with partly cloudy skies in the rest of the state. Highs in the high 60s to low 80s, north to south, a little bit cooler along the coast. And on Friday, partly to mostly cloudy, with some showers possible, especially in the north. We'll see high temperatures on Friday in the mid-60s to high 70s, with little bit cooler temperatures along the coast. This is MPBN. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. Before starting a six-day recess early this morning, Maine lawmakers enacted a controversial bill that would provide limited general assistance funds for about 1,000 asylum seekers in Maine, most of whom reside in the greater Portland area. The Maine House and Senate provided final approval for LD 369 without a recorded vote on the measure. The bill faces a promised veto from Governor Paul LePage, and as A.J. Higgins reports, supporters are now preparing for a GA showdown between the governor and the legislature.
It costs the state of Maine a little more than $3 million a year to reimburse municipalities that provide general assistance to asylum seekers. That money for housing and food represents a little less than 1% of the state's $6.7 billion two-year budget. But it's not really the dollar figure that's triggered Governor Paul LePage's objections to the program. For him, it's a matter of principle and, to some extent, legislative process. And that's why he plans to veto a bill that would provide up to 24 months of general assistance benefits for asylum seekers, the people he calls illegal aliens.
The people of Maine have been disenfranchised, and I expect that we've got to get as many people to at least look at the bills as possible if you're going to be run by a minority.
LD 369 was originally crafted to deny benefits to asylum seekers who are lawfully present in Maine but who have not yet been declared refugees. A recent court ruling bolstered the state's position that it does not have to reimburse cities and towns for the costs of general assistance for asylum seekers so long as there is no declarative Maine statute for that purpose. So, then the bill was amended to address that requirement. It would now provide up to 24 months of GA benefits to lawfully present immigrants who can demonstrate that they are trying to obtain asylum. A majority of all four caucuses in the Senate and House signed on to the revision, with the exception of one, the House Republicans, who have the votes to sustain LePage's veto of the bill. Ken Fredette is the House Republican leader.
I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that bill will be sustained.
A sustained veto carries a $2.5 million price tag for the city of Portland if it chooses on its own to continue providing assistance to the nearly 1,000 asylum seekers who live in the area. Portland Mayor Michael Brennan says he will meet with the city council tonight to discuss how the city should proceed.
I always am hopeful that there's a legislative miracle.
Demonstrators from the city's immigrant community plan to make their feelings known on the issue outside City Hall. Many of them are grateful for the amendment by GOP Senator Amy Volk of Scarborough that would permit the cap GA benefits for asylum seekers, whom she says she has come to know as good citizens and hard workers. And Volk said last week, that's something Maine needs more of.
Between 2006 and 2010, there were over 2,700 new immigrant-owned businesses. Maine's immigrant-owned businesses brought in $120 million in net income in 2014.
Those kind of arguments produced a 29-5 vote in favor of the amendment in the Senate last week. But opponents, such as Senator Eric Brakey, an Auburn Republican who sponsored the original anti-GA bill, says Volk's policy makes Maine an outlier.
We are one of only four states that provides these sorts of benefits. As a poor, mostly rural state, our taxpayers cannot afford welfare to everyone from everywhere.
Those Republican concerns, along with others that maintain the GA money spent on asylum seekers should be redirected to Mainers who are elderly, infirmed, or mentally ill, fail to sway supporters who say denying help to those from foreign lands seeking a better life in Maine is downright un-American. In fact, Representative Peter Stuckey, a Portland Democrat, told his seatmates that it's even worse than that.
It leaves me speechless, Mr. Speaker. Speechless. Because it's more than that. It's a thinly veiled excuse for not standing up to our responsibilities to each other as human beings.
LD 369 is now sitting on the governor's desk, awaiting his promised veto pen. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
One of the big items of unfinished business for state lawmakers is a state borrowing plan. Legislative leaders are working on details of a bond package for the full legislature to consider when it reconvenes next Tuesday. But as Mal Leary reports, the negotiations seem to be shaping up like a replay of the battle over the state budget.
Every legislative session after the state budget is approved, lawmakers have a battle over bonds, specifically what bond proposals they will send to the voters for their approval. Budget passage is key because it determines how much money can be spent on those bonds that the voters approve. This year is no exception. House Speaker Mark Eaves, a Democrat from North Berwick, says his caucus has some clear priorities.
Roads and bridges are a top priority. We've been pushing the affordable senior housing bond proposal, which is part of the Keep Me Home proposal that we've been talking about, Maine being the oldest state in the nation and really needing to do right by those seniors that want to live independently in their homes.
The dozens of bonding requests far outstrip the state's ability to pay for all of them. The total, which includes some duplicate bonding proposals, comes close to $1 billion. The individual proposals range from a few million dollars to over $100 million, but the budget only has enough debt service money to pay for about $140 million in new borrowing. Senate President Mike Thibodeau, a Republican from Winterport, says his caucus is divided on borrowing, but he says most of his members will support a small package that includes money for roads and bridges.
That is our focus. The Republican caucus is very committed to a roads and bridges bond package. And, again, we see the dynamics of divided government, and we'll have a conversation with our colleagues from the other side of the aisle to see what their priorities are. But it has to be about job creation.
Senate Democratic leader Justin Alfond of Portland says leaders have to decide on an overall borrowing level and set some broad parameters on how the bonds will be structured that are sent to voters. He says the issues are well known and have been discussed broadly by lawmakers.
These bonds have been around all session. They've been heard in front of appropriations. Individual sponsors have been talking to me, have been talking to folks on the other side of the aisle. So people are ready for the conversation. Now that the budget is almost done, it's time for this to get done for the state.
House Republican leader Ken Fredette of Newport is less optimistic about a bond package. He says there is little appetite in his caucus for a big borrowing package, but he acknowledges the need for a highway bond. That's because without additional funding, the Department of Transportation will not have any money for capital improvements a year from now when the current bonds have been expended.
Looking at what the needs are in terms of the transportation budget, you know, I think they're looking at about $80 million, $85 million. I think that's probably a good place to start and to stop, quite frankly.
The leaders hope to work out the broad framework of a borrowing plan in the next few days so the Appropriations Committee can meet and vote out the various bond bills, as amended, in time for the full legislature to consider them on Tuesday. It takes a two-thirds vote of the House and Senate to send a bond to the voters for their approval. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
And supporters of a national park in northern Maine have a lot more work to do to convince residents in one area town to support the proposal. In a non-binding straw vote Tuesday, 252 Medway residents opposed the park, while 102 voters supported it. As Jay Field reports, park opponents say the vote is proof that an expensive campaign to convince area residents to support the park is not working.
That campaign is being waged by Roxanne Quimby's son, Lucas St. Clair, and Elliottsville Plantation, the nonprofit that manages Quimby's vast landholdings in the North Woods. Under the proposal, Elliottsville would donate 100,000 acres of land toward the creation of a 75,000-acre national park between Baxter State Park and the East Branch of the Penobscot River and a national recreation area of the same size. The remaining 50,000 acres would be purchased as the project moves forward and other landowners become willing to sell. In recent months, Elliottsville has spent extensive time and money in an effort to sell the idea to skeptical residents in the Katahdin region.
We still have work to do in Medway.
David Farmer is a spokesman for Elliottsville Plantation and Lucas St. Clair, who argues that a national park would create between 450 and 1,000 jobs and jumpstart an economic revival in a region devastated by mill closures and the collapse of papermaking.
Big ideas take time, and we're going to continue to work in Medway and East Millinocket, which has an election coming up on Monday, to change hearts and minds and to tell the story of the opportunity that the park and recreation area could create.
The Katahdin Area Chamber of Commerce and the Medway Board of Selectmen are backing the proposal, but those endorsements did little to win over park opponents in Medway. Ted O'Mara is with the Maine Woods Coalition, a collection of Katahdin area groups fighting a proposed park and recreation area.
It was pretty convincing. People in Medway, one of the towns that will be closest to the proposed park that would be most impacted by it, resoundingly said no to the idea.
But O'Mara says that doesn't mean that a no vote was easy for some residents.
We all know that area has really been rocked by the closure of the mills in Millinocket and East Millinocket, but I think it says the people in that area, they recognize that they have vast forest resources, that they have hydropower, they have rail and a network of private roads, and the best use of them is not to wall it off and create a national park.
East Millinocket residents will have their say on a proposed national park and recreation area on Monday. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
And at 14 minutes before 6 o'clock, it's time to check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
If we could only bottle this day's weather and consume the ambrosia all throughout the summer, and tonight's as well, the skies will be generally clear, statewide, comfortable, mid-40s north, upper 50s south. Tomorrow's skies become partly sunny over northern Maine, partly cloudy western, central, and down east counties, mostly sunny farther south. Upper 60s north, low 80s south, with a notable afternoon sea breeze. Friday, clouds will congregate over the northern third of the state with a few afternoon showers, partly cloudy and pleasing for much of the state. Mid-60s north, upper 70s south, cooler at the coast. Saturday is the day to play with abundant sunshine statewide, highs in the 70s, coolest to the beaches. Sunday, chilly, with another soaking possible. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Caroline Losnick, Ed Morin, Barbara Caridi, and Susan Sharon. I'm Nora Flaherty.